Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Ford Keast LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Lisa Bowden. Lisa, I'm so delighted to have you with me today.
Thanks, Jan. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay. We have lots to talk about, and I wanted to get into sort of our agenda for our discussion. And I wanted to chat with you about a variety of things, and I'm going to look away because I have my screen filled with questions and so on. So that's why I'm looking over here and not right at you. So I wanted to talk about your career in human resources, and of course, a lot of what this podcast and video is about is our careers and how we have career resilience and so on. We're also going to talk about how your career came to an abrupt end based on your diagnosis of multiple myeloma. So that's very important for us to talk about. And I really appreciate that you're open to discussing that because it's an important topic and important to hear about the journey. I also wanted to chat with you about friendship and spend a little bit of time talking about your dog, Oliver, who I admire so much. So that's kind of where we're going. Does that all make sense?
Awesome. Sounds great.
Okay. So the job that you held, can you describe that a bit for me?
Yeah. So I started in HR over 20 years ago and landed in 2007, actually, at Goodwill Industries, not for profit here in London, starting in an HR role, the only HR person at that time at the organization, and evolved over time into a vice presidency role of human resources. So really, I was in charge of the people aspect of the business. So employees, the career center, where we supported community clients for career development. So it was a fantastic job, very rewarding. Goodwill Industries is all about people. The donations that they accept drives the business so that we can employ people and develop people. And so it was certainly a great fit for me. Loved it. Developed a great big team between HR generalists, health and safety, career center. I would have to say that was where I felt I'd reached, you know, the position that I had always aspired to be at eventually. So I was there.
Was it important to you that it was a business like Goodwill, which is a nonprofit and so on? Did that resonate with you?
Yes. I was drawn to it because the people focus. And I you know, looking back in my career, why I developed into the HR kind of business sector was people. I always had a passion for people. I enjoyed talking with people. I enjoyed trying to help people, whether it was, you know, way back when figuring out how to best service them in a customer service role, or ending up in a not-for-profit kind of, you know, how do we help these individuals who can't get into the job market due to whatever, you know, life challenges in their way, how do we help them? And it became, you know, taking that expertise of HR, but becoming so much more. The reward of that not-for-profit was certainly meaningful to me, gave me a purpose every day. Sure, there were tough things, as there always are in any job, but it was extremely important for me to have that people aspect.
You started there and you mentioned that you were the only HR person?
Yes, yeah, so I replaced an individual, an HR, I guess it was called HR administrator at the time. She had left 4 months prior. So when I walked into my office, and it was in a big old building on Horton Street, there were literally piles on the floor. So there was health and safety piles, first aid reports, and it was just kind of welcome to the team. And, you know, so it was a little daunting, but I have to say I was able to build from there. Right, and create more of a structured environment for HR in goodwill.
The team from just you to how many people?
Oh gosh, on the HR side, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 full time just in the HR side, and then the nice thing was taking that career center aspect and putting it under the HR umbrella, which was a nice fit. So that I had a large team there, 4 managers that developed all the workshops to help individuals, all the job search strategies, job coaches, which in turn helped our employees as well. So it was kind of a nice fit from employee to client. Yeah. So it was quite an evolution from that administrator pile of paper role to what it became.
So Goodwill, I just want to make clear, who are Goodwill's clients?
Goodwill, the clients are any individual within our territory. And right now we have career centers across Ontario, so not just London. And they help individuals that may be on Ontario Works. Often Goodwill had relationships with the municipalities to help individuals to get them off Ontario Works, Employment Ontario, so provincial, and federal funding as well.
Did you have a very high stress job?
I would say yes. There was a lot of pressure as we grew. So for example, when I started, we had 120 employees. Our furthest territory went to Kitchener. London to Kitchener. And then we grew. So from by the time I left in 2017, we had 1,600 almost. So we grew right across Ontario by taking over other territories. So it became bigger, a lot more complicated, more of an enterprise, and it's actually called a social enterprise today. It's more business than ever, but still with that nonprofit side for sure.
And you were busy as well. You didn't just delegate everything away.
No, I'm not the best, I'll admit, at saying no to things. So I did find myself getting into lots of different committees accepting more responsibility. And, you know, perhaps in reflection, there were times I should have said no. I've learned to do that more so today, but at the time it seemed to me I felt proud that I was being asked to do these extra things. Kind of a reflection of who I was. But you do have to say no at times because it can just become overwhelming. So I would say yes, certainly the last number of years, stressful as our growth continued and responsibility grew. And
And what was your way to cope with that stress?
I struggled, I'll be honest. I mean, wellness, mindfulness, all of that we were very well aware of. We did a lot of education in the HR team to our folks, employees and clients. Did we practice it ourselves? I'd have to say we weren't really good at that. We tried at times to bring in yoga, you know, for lunch breaks, and that never really stayed. So I would have to say externally was friendships, continuing with, you know, strong supports that I already had, even before I had the job at Goodwill, were very important. Walks, Oliver, who we'll get to later, having that outlet of something totally outside. It was finding the time for all that too, which I didn't make use of well.
Do you feel you ended up kind of on a hamster wheel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there were days, that you felt like you were just repeating the same things. It was just, you weren't getting anywhere. And I think that hamster wheel is a great analogy, Jan. You just were spinning your wheels. And that can be very, very hard on the mind and the body, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think as you look back at yourself at that point, what advice would you give that person now?
Oh, I would certainly put balance as a key mandate. Work is work, and having the me time, the family time, the home time has to be separated. I think turning off the mobile devices, making sure that you're totally disengaging for a period of time is really important. And I with the development of, you know, Blackberries initially when I got it, I mean, you were connected all the time and that was kind of a perk. But really in reflection, no, you were always connected, you know, you were constantly keeping up on your emails because you felt it'd be easier to go in the next morning being on top of all that.
Yes.
Yeah. But you really didn't have that proper work-life balance.
Yeah, I think that's actually becoming more and more of a problem. And I wonder too now if it's not even more of a problem because so many of us are working from home that it's very easy to access your office on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yes, yeah. I agree. I agree completely.
I wanted to switch gears to the health issue that cropped up for you. And I wonder if you could take us through that story, that here you are in a high powered job, a very busy job, very important job, and what happened with your health?
So we're going back to 2017. Started off with a normal blood work to have a life insurance policy renewed. So very normal procedure. Nurse comes to the home, goes through a series of questions and draws blood and you know, says we'll be in touch, and that's all that's needed. It seemed very simple. Then a few weeks later, I got a letter from the insurance company basically saying that they weren't able to renew the policy as is. Not much more to it. So there was a few red flags there. Then got a call from my doctor, my family doctor, who said we need to talk. So of course, a lot of things going through your head. Did get in to see her very quickly, and she was quite positive. She said, you know, there's some high proteins in your blood work. Doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. Let's not jump to conclusions. And she pleaded with me, do not go on the internet. Do not do that. And then, of course, I didn't for about 3 days. Ended up running some more blood work that went into deeper detail and discovered that I had looked like a blood disease. It could be in very, very early stages. Or it could be cancer. So she set up a referral right away, and I got into London Regional Cancer Program with a hematologist. He even, upon that meeting, was very positive, saying, you know, your levels aren't that high. Let's not jump to conclusion, but I need to run some more tests, which he did. And I got to know the full scope of the hospital, MRIs, full body skeletal scans, x-rays, bone marrow biopsy. Very, very thorough, I have to say. And unfortunately, the results came in beginning of November 2017, that unfortunately I did have multiple myeloma, which is cancer of the blood in the bone marrow. I've learned since it's the second most common blood cancer out there behind lymphoma. But like most people, I had never heard of it. Many people around me had never heard of it. So devastating outcome to all that blood work and medical tests. That was November 1st, 2017. And within 2 weeks, I was out of the workplace.
So you had been working through all these tests and waiting and wondering and so on. Had you had any symptoms or thought, geez, I don't feel well?
I did have some what I'd consider to be joint pain in the spring, and saw my doctor about that. They did x-rays and said it was just common arthritis, very normal for my age. So that was... there was nothing else. There was absolutely no other symptoms at all. Mm-hmm. So in reflection, my doctor did say I was caught very early, which is a good thing, so that they can start treatment before there is damage. Unfortunately, with myeloma, if it goes untreated, it starts to damage the bone. So a lot of individuals, their first symptoms are pain in their back, their spine, ribs, and oftentimes it's fractures that they didn't know they had.
So you packed up and left the workplace.
Yes.
How did that feel?
Looking back, I don't even know how I went day to day. It was... you know, the initial sit down when I came in with the news, so November 2nd, I came into the office, met with my executive team, told them the news. We all had a tough go of emotion, and they sent me home, my choice too. They said, you know, take the rest of the day. So I did. And, you know, I got myself a bit together to get back in and just do what I had to do. I had a lot of responsibilities to hand over, mm-hmm. a lot of thinking to do to make sure that my position would be still operating when I walked out that door without a person, right? We couldn't recruit somebody that quickly. So it became as I said, surreal. It was a lot of us coming together. My team, my HR team was incredible. My management team at the Career Center was incredible. The executive team, just making sure, pulling every part that they could before I had to walk out that door.
So. Surely you were in shock and yet still, you know, doing these things that were normal.
Yeah, it was I absolutely. And that's why I think it you almost went into auto mode, I think was the thing. Mm-hmm. Because when I did stop, and I did at times close the door and stop and think, it was devastating. It was just the emotion would overwhelm me, then get a grip again and, you know, try to carry on.
That's kind of what we do. A body in motion stays in motion unless acted on by an outside force. I always remember the definition of, well, it's a definition of inertia, isn't it? And we keep going. And
yes.
And then, you know, we realize that we have to switch everything completely. And so then you basically entered the medical world.
Yes. Yes. So really it then became, everything became very external. Meaning my schedule was dictated by my treatment plan.
Yeah.
So my day to day is completely shifted. And for the next year, it was all medical treatment, in and out of hospital, in and out of the chemo suite, in and out of my oncologist's office. It was just the way it worked. I had a calendar on the wall and I'd write it out month by month of the appointments, the daily meds I had to take. As I recall, sometimes there was 27 pills I'd have to take in the morning, which was tough. You know, that whole year was dictated. And I think honestly, going into that year, there was part of me that thought, well, at the end of the year, we'll see. Maybe I can go back to work. You know, probably didn't get it at that point that this might not happen for me in terms of returning to my pre-diagnosis world.
So you were still thinking in the mode of, this is a period of time off, and then I'll resume my working life.
Yes. It might be different. I might not, you know, have the same level of responsibility, same position. Goodwill had even said, you know, we can figure it out. You know, there could be something that you could come back to that might work for you. Keep your mind open, they kept saying, which was wonderful. Very supportive.
And did that give you a feeling of comfort and a goal, or what did that thought process do for you?
It did initially. I think it kind of kept me thinking, you know, this is again still surreal.
Yes.
And I would go back to reality of some sort, whatever that new reality looked like. Mm-hmm. As time went on and I realized that as a side component of treatment and leap, you know, going on to maintenance, I transitioned from active treatment to maintenance. I was not the same in a number of ways. Cognitively, they call it chemo fog. I truly believe in it. The thought process is different. The focus can be different. So that's something that was, you know, a concern for me. Also fatigue. I could not go through a day without at least one nap, sometimes two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I got going longer through that year, I thought, how am I going to work? And if so, you know, here's the queen of accommodations, pre-diagnosis, how does one accommodate for naps? You know, it just started to hit. And I think the HR side of me kept saying, this doesn't look good, you know, from a return to work perspective. So
when did you turn the corner on the thought process of returning to work?
Yeah, it was, I have to say, once I crested that year, because that's when I knew that I was about as good as I was going to get. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. It was just a new normal. I was learning what my new capacities were. And I was learning to accept them. And I know the one thing that, you know, we talked about it before, about the stress level. I knew that number one priority for me going forward, because I was still on maintenance, I am going to relapse. Multiple myeloma is not a curable cancer, and you do relapse. The utmost importance to me is wellness, keeping myself as healthy as I can be, keeping my mindfulness as clear as it can be. And that involved a lot of new routines that in the past I kind of didn't make time for. Well, I had to make time for them. So once I got going on that, I knew that there's no way I could go back to a full-time job, even a part-time job, without incredible flexibility. And again, I don't know how you would do that in a standard job, but I have to say, talking with my long-term disability case manager, she agreed. She was great. I mean, that's her expertise too, is trying to figure out return to work if it's possible. Yes.
Yeah.
So we talked our way through it, and it just didn't seem like it would be the right thing for me. So to even try.
So Lisa, you, through this whole process, you must have reached out to the multiple myeloma support group and so on. What did that do for you?
That was a huge positive for me. I luckily linked in with them almost right at the beginning, not right at the diagnosis, but shortly after, before I started the really intense treatment. So they became a resource. They became a support in terms of just reaching out, saying, you know, how are you doing? Anything you need? I attended my first meeting probably January 2018. And I quickly realized it wasn't just about sitting around and people talking about their cancer. It was about learning. It was about advocacy, what the group actively did to try to make sure myeloma patients had the right care in London and area, had access to the right drugs. It was an incredible group of people. Mm-hmm. And I quickly became a real member of that group. And you know, I don't know where I would have been without them, because I took a lot of comfort and support and knowledge from them to get through to today. Yeah.
And I also wanted to ask you, in terms of family and friends, how did that support system help?
Well, you really, and I don't want to get emotional here, but you really can become easily overwhelmed by the people that, yes, they're in your life. And then when something like this happens, man, the support, the love, it was amazing. I mean, I was so touched every single day, having the friends, the family, the people dropping things off on my doorstep. Popping in for a quick visit because they know I don't have a lot of energy, but they were there, right? And that was incredible. That and still is, still happening today. You know, it's amazing what you don't even recognize is there. I mean, yes, you know, you've got these friends, you've got these people that you socialize and you do things with, and family that you see. But wow, when something like this happens, I am very lucky, very, very lucky to have those people in my life.
So would you say that, I mean, that's an incredible positive, what you just described there. That's so lovely that people step up. And I think that's so critical in life. Surely that's what it's all about. I'm always saying that must be what it's all about. And that's so huge. But what are some of the positives that have come out of all this?
Well, and I think you bring up an excellent point. You do have to look for them. They're there. I mean, I have been made aware of the important things in life. And right from this, I'll go back to one really, really simple thing. When I got out of the hospital the first time, I was in there for a month, isolation, no open windows, no fresh air. And when I could sit out in the back on my deck and hear the birds, watch the birds, feel the breeze, I was overwhelmed. And I know there's that saying, take the time to smell the roses. We have to all do that. Whether you are, you know, in a situation like myself or not, taking the time to just appreciate the moments. It's incredible. It's incredible. And I've done that. I still do that. I go out for my walks and I look around and I, you know, smile at people that I don't know. And it's incredible. It's very, very healthy. Secondly, with the myeloma group, I knew that I still wanted to have some value in my life in terms of I'll say career. It ended up being volunteerism, but I met with the co-leaders of my group and said, you know, I'd like to contribute more. What can I do? And they quickly got me into working on the Walk of Champions, our annual fundraiser. And that was incredible. And then, you know, it evolved into being part of the steering committee, where we worked on who the guest speakers are going to be at our monthly meetings and, you know, what committees are we on to advocate for, you know, more doctors, because our clinic is so busy. Unfortunately, there's more people being diagnosed every day. But anyway, it's evolved to now I'm a co-leader. So I'm a co-leader of the group. I love it. It's hit all those things that I didn't think was achievable, right? That I didn't think, who's going to want me because I, you know, I don't have the same energy. I need my naps. I need, I need my later start in the day. Well, they do, because they all get it, right? They all have similar stories. So
now you have two lovely sons who you adore.
And I do.
How has your relationship with them developed?
Pretty amazing. And I don't recommend anybody go through it to experience it, but my boys have been amazing. One of the proudest moments was when I was in hospital twice, each time for a month, and how the two of them managed to, you know, they each shared the duties of the house, walking the dog, cooking the meals, buying the groceries, cleaning the kitchen. And the neatest thing about it is they would each call me at different times during the day to tell me what they had achieved together, right? They were proud. Yeah. And I, you know, that was an incredible growing up moment. I mean, now they're in their early 20s, but they had to quickly shift gears too. And know, they've been amazing. They've been amazing. We actually did a trip, a family trip on our bucket list last August 2019. I'll clarify, pre-pandemic, and thank goodness we did it last year, but it was a trip of a lifetime for the three of us. Oh, plus Oliver, four of us.
You and I are friends.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're part of a larger group of friends, and there's six of us. So there's Cindy, there's Jen, there's Katie, there's Linda, there's you, and there's me. And that's our team and our friendship and so on. What has our group been like for you through this?
A lifeline. I'll get emotional here, so there may need to be some editing. This group who we've been together now coming up 21 years. Yeah. I can't believe it. You know, came together so much for me in terms of emotional support, physical support, cheering support, family support, here for my boys as well. Did anything and everything for me that I needed. I can't express how much I love you and the girls. Just been incredible. And it's been an amazing evolution, I guess, unfortunately, due to the diagnosis, but we've grown together. I mean, we've evolved together and went from workmates to the best of friends.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's amazing. It's amazing.
And I think that as I look at the group, I'm so proud of us as a group. And you know what? All of us have had life stuff happen and some extremely tough life stuff happen. And yet we've always been able to turn to the group and have such laughs, such fun, such craziness. And how blessed are we to have that group. And you know, we all have other friendships and so on off to the side and other groups even, but I'm just so happy to be part of our group.
Yes, me too. Absolutely. Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about Oliver. And Oliver is your puppy. And yes, he is such a part of you that I just wanted to sort of run with the thought of Oliver for a few minutes for us.
Oliver, he's my little black pug. He's my little man. He's my shadow because he always seems to be beside me. I've got him quarantined right now, so he didn't jump right up into the screen. But he's been such a support. Just unconditionally, he's there. He's by my side. And I have to say, like, I'm going back to being in hospital, but it was such a tough go. Being away from him, and at the time I had another dog as well, was one of the hardest things. Really? Because they didn't understand. People you could talk to, you know, still have that connection and explain, and they could visit family, but the dogs, they had no idea. You know, they had no idea. They just knew I was gone for a long time. And, you know, that maybe is why Oliver's by my side now all the time. You know, he does yoga with me. I know I've shown you pictures, Jan. He sees the mat come out and he gets right on there with a stuffed animal and stretches. You know, he also gets me out for my walks every day, which is, you know, a key part of my wellness strategy. He's an integral part of my well-being, I have to say.
Yeah.
You know, he's very important little man.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I wanted to ask you, when people are challenged as you've been challenged, is it a good idea to have a companion like that?
Well, I can speak for me. Yes. Like he gives me comfort. He's been an integral part of me strengthening every day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, right at the beginning, my walks were, you know, maybe one or two houses as my energy, you know, was depleted. But just getting him out, I think animals are a great therapeutic component, whether you're a cat or dog person or other,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there any advice that you would want to pass on to anyone who is going through the type of thing that you've been living with?
I think don't give up on opportunities, meaning that they may look different than what you were used to pre-situation, whatever that situation change is, but you can find meaning and value to meet your own needs as well as, you know, contributing. It just can take some time, you know, and talking it over with people, with your closest friends and family is very helpful as well. But don't think you have to, you know, you've got that one path. My path stopped, and I like to think there was kind of a fork in the road that presented itself, you know, that I could still have that people connection and be helpful and do things, but just in a different way, and one that's very meaningful for me, obviously, with the group. So, yeah, keep your doors open. They may just look differently.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah. That's great advice always. If we wanted to learn a little bit more about multiple myeloma or help out or donate, where should we take a look?
Yeah, well, two resources. I'll go to our local one, which is the London and District Myeloma Support Group. So we have a Facebook page, we have a website, lots of information there and links. The biggest in Canada is Myeloma Canada. They're based out of Montreal. I am on a couple committees with them of late.
Of course you are.
Of course, yeah. Didn't say no to that. but amazing individuals, amazing. And, you know, they're at the forefront of what's going on in Canada in terms of research and treatment. So either of those two resources will give you lots of information. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you for that. Lisa, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This has meant the world to me.
Thanks, Jan. I so appreciate you asking me to join. This, just to clarify, this is my first podcast. So there you go. Another
not
first.
Not the last.
Thank you very much.
To our viewers and listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed our conversation today. Lisa is someone who's incredibly important in my life and incredibly important in a lot of people's life and one little dog too. And I hope you've enjoyed this time together. And until we meet again, thank you very much.